All right. I put the rubrics here in part because I wanted you to have access to sort of what I thought was important about these things. Getting perfectly what the key says is not necessarily important, but these kinds of things that show up in the key, some of these are just answers, but some of them also give some sense of how to go about what am I looking for to see if we have correct solutions there. And so all of those are available. Both the quizzes and the labs, with a few extras, like for example, 11 didn't have a quiz, and 8 didn't have a rubric because we never go around grading it. But they're all up here. If you look in final evaluations, sorry, there's nothing to show you yet. I do intend Monday to put, at once that has happened, to put the set of questions that were there, which hopefully will help out if you're going on for the final as well. So there is that. Yeah, so the question is about the length. The final quiz will be longer since it's 45 minutes. Yes, so that's correct. I'm expecting these will be approximately 2 in-class quizzes for each topic, is roughly the size I am targeting. So for example, if we think about proofs, typically in an in-class quiz where I had a proof, you would work through one proof. So I would expect to be able to work through 2 proofs would be a reasonable thing for these, et cetera, for the others. This will also be longer compared to fall 2019, although not quite the same. So fall 2019, these were 30 minutes. So this is again, like half again as much, but I do expect to cover a little bit more in general than I did in fall 2019. Anything else? My plan from here was sort of, if you have questions, I will go through them. So we'll wait for questions. Makeup quizzes you mentioned, we had option of proofs. Will the quizzes say how many we need to do? Oh, yes. So, the wrong button. Wrong button again. Okay. So if we look at, if we back out to what we did fall, let's give sort of a little peek at how that worked. So we did this in both of these. If we look at, we only did it for the second one, I guess. All right. So if we look at the final quiz, you'll see here, it looks like this. One of the tasks was prove either one of these to your choice using induction. And there is prove one of these through your choice using contradiction. That it will be clearly specified like this for any sort of things you have choices on. Will you have feedback on quiz 12 before the final? Yes. So my internal deadline is Wednesday midday. So Wednesday the 29th, you'll get feedback on quiz 12, in class quiz 12, if you take it. I hope to get it done before that, but I can't guarantee that. I would like to give you information as soon as possible, but I will get it to you no later than then so that you'll know how you did going into the final. Can we decide not to submit? Absolutely. You are welcome to go in, look at it, and say, I don't think I'll do well. You're even welcome to go in, do your work, and then just not upload it. That is a fine thing to do. Even if we don't take the proof quiz, we would still need to do proofs for the other topics. The intent is to try to separate these things out. So the intent is to put the proofs in the proof. The only place I expect to see any proof-like things show up in the other space is I do expect the logic section to do some sort of that direct entailment rule kind of a direct proof space will probably show up in the logic section. But I do not expect proofs to show up under structures or numbers. And similarly, although some of the proofs will be based on numbers, some of them will be based on structures, right? You'll be able to sort of pick and choose. You'll need to use logic for the other things, right? These are roughly, arguably we could swap the order of these, but these are roughly in importance order, right? Logic will sort of show up in all of the others. Numbers and structures will sort of be independent of the others. Anything else you would like me to do to help review for what's coming up? Happy to work example problems, go back over concepts, anything you would like to know. If there is nothing you want to know, then we'll declare review completed. Can we generally discuss permutations as a topic? Absolutely. All right. Permutation. The idea of a permutation is all of the reorderings. And in particular, when we're dealing with permutations in this class, we've been interested in counting them. When we're thinking about these permutations, sorry, there's a quick question, let me answer that. If you want to check your answers, can you ask on Piazza? Certainly. You're welcome to ask on Piazza. I'm not promising to answer everything on Piazza. In general, I release the keys to the ones I want to release the keys to, but your fellow students likely will give you some help there, possibly the TAs as well. All right, so permutations. So this idea of reordering. So we want to count all of the ways to reorder things. And so the simplest version of a permutation is simply a factorial, although it gets more complicated in other contexts. Why is it a factorial? If I think about 3, 1, and 4, and then want to know all of the reorderings, the concept is I need to make a new list. It needs to have 3 things in it. And I can pick any one of the 3 for the first spot. Before the next spot, I've only got 2 left. And for the spot after that, I've only got 1 left. So a simple permutation is just going to look like a factorial of the number of options. I say simple because not all permutations are this simple. Are this simple. In particular, indistinguishability. Indistinguishable elements make permutations more complicated. Okay. So while this I expect to be 3 times 2 times 1 is 6 permutations. If I go 3, 1, 4, 1, now I'm in a different position because swapping the 2 ones doesn't do anything. They're indistinguishable from each other. So given we have this challenge of indistinguishability, we could try to count all of the possible situations and say, okay, you can pick 4 things for the first, but 2 of them are the same. So you can really pick 3 or 2 and try to do those sorts of things. But the general rule we do is we'll count as if they were distinguishable, right? Well, imagine we have a 1 and a 1 prime. That'll simply give us 4 factorial equals 24. Okay? And then we're going to divide that by all of the permutations of the indistinguishable elements to get the total number of possible ways we could deal with this. And we can do that with any set of indistinguishable things we happen to have. So if we have 3, 1, 4, 1, 5, 9, 2, 6, 5, 3, 5. Okay. If this is the sequence we are taking a permutation of, note this couldn't be a set because I have the same number multiple times. This is a sequence. I need to know how many possible things there are. And so I believe I put here 11. So I expect 11 factorial ways of doing it. But then I need to notice what are all of the multiples that exist. So I'm going to have a 2 factorial down there for those, and I'm going to have a 2 factorial down there for those, and I'm going to have a 3 factorial down there for those. All of the ways of undoing that portion. I could certainly say more about permutations. Let me answer a few of the other questions. If you want me to say more about particular parts of permutations, let me know. I will dive into these. So for numbers, can we just review prime factor, sequence counting, and probability? So I tried to put the titles on the quizzes to show you what they're covering. I'm not promising I got that 100% right, but I believe that will be a sufficient review. Okay, so we have a question to look particularly at the proof from last year's logic final. Okay, I'll get to that in just a moment. Any additional questions, any more things you'd like me to say about permutations? Okay. I guess I should just add one little thing. The choose is a special kind of permutation. We have a no thank you from the original asker, so we're good to go. All right. And then we immediately had a question about when do we use choose. Okay. So choose is designed to tell us a particular kind of information. So choose is designed to tell us when we are choosing from a group. Okay. So if I have 11 things and I'm picking four, how many ways can I pick four? The concept of choosing is the idea that we are going to permute. And so we do have to worry about duplicates. If there could be duplicates in our choosing, if we're choosing from a sequence instead of a set, we need to worry about duplicates in the usual way. We permute, and then we keep the beginning. Okay? And because we're keeping the beginning, we're generally then going to think about effectively, right? So if we're saying we want to have 11 and choose 4, that is the same thing as permuting the 11. And then because I only care what was in the first 4, I can unpermute those 4, and I don't care the order of the things afterwards, so I can unpermute those other things. And this is how the choose notation gets designed. So use choose notation when you're selecting a set of things without replacement. I can't pick the same one twice. This is an important concept, right? Choose is not, you're not allowed to duplicate a choice, okay? If we are allowed to duplicate, we simply do to a power. So if I have 11 things that I need to choose 4 of, and I can choose the same one every time, that's simply 11 to the fourth, if duplicates are allowed. And so understanding, can I repeat something or not, is important. It's also important for permutations. If I could have a reordering of this list that's just 3, 3, 3, then I wouldn't be using factorial, right? I'd be using some sort of power notation instead. All right. We have a question about doing the proof from the logic section of last year's final. Yes, okay. So the logic section from last year's final had apply axioms, use direct proof and or proof by cases. You mix math and English if you want, however you want to work it, to show that P and Q implies W is equivalent to P implies W or not Q. Okay, and so this is just applying proof rules. So on this final, we gave them all a copy of all of the axioms. You'll have access to that via the website because it's open notes, right? So we could look up the axioms in question. But let us just see what we can do in moving towards this. So when we're thinking about applying the axioms, we can use direct proof, we can do proof by cases. Proof by cases eventually turns into a truth table, so that gets us a long way, but let's just see what we can do by direct proof first. So I'll just pick one end and see how close to the other I can get. I've got P and Q implies W. Let's start here. Well, implies, I don't have a lot of axioms for implies. The main thing I have for implies is turning it into a disjunction. Not the antecedent or the consequent. This is one of our proof rules about implication. And then I've got a not around an and, so I'd really like to push that in using De Morgan's rule to get not P or not Q or W. But now I'm in a beautiful position. I have only ors. Ors can be reordered however I want. I can reassociate them however I want because they are commutative and they are associative. And so my two ors I can reorder freely. So I could then do, for example, this, not Q or W. So I could use the associative rule of disjunction. And then I could also use the commutative rule to try to get them in the order that they're supposed to show up here. And now I'm almost where I need. I just have a disjunction where I needed an implication, but fortunately the knots are even already in the same position that I would need to make that happen. Okay, so I could do this. I could have started from the other side and done a similar set of work. I also could have said, let's proceed by cases. The case where P is true, the case where P is false, and seen where that goes. Any of these would have worked. Okay, so let's come back. We have a question about reordering. Wrong one. So for reordering, is writing down the number of elements as a factorial the same as writing down 2 to the number of elements? No, it's not. Okay, let's see if I can sort of explain why in hopefully somewhat clear way. Okay, so Let's consider the numbers 4, 3, 2, and 1. Let's even do a smaller set. Let's just do 4, 3, and 2. The permutations of these are 4, 3, 2, 4, 2, 3, 2, 4, 3, 2, 3, 4, 3, 2, 4, 3, 4, 2. There are 3 factorial equals 6 of the permutations. And how did I get that? I said I can put any one of 3 values in the first spot, and then I've got 2 left for the second spot, and so forth. Now, if I had done instead, I want a sequence of 3 elements where the elements are taken from any member of this set with replication, then I could have had all of those, but I also could have had 4, 4, 4, and 4, 4, 3, and 4, 3, 4, and 3, 4, 4, and 4, 4, 2, and 4, 2, 4, and so on. 2, 2, 2. A whole lot more elements are possible if I'm allowed to repeat. The total of both, all of these, all of the possible ways of writing things down with or without repetitions is going to be the number of values I can put in each spot times to raise to the power of the number of spots, which is 18 in this particular case. A significantly larger number. Yes, that's 18. A significantly larger number than 6. So we can't use these two interchangeably. They are not interchangeable numbers. It's 27, thank you, not 18. That felt wrong. So I need to know which one I'm doing in order to make it work. I can't use them interchangeably. I use factorial when you can't do the same thing twice. I use power when you can do the same thing twice. Is this the only kind of proof that will show up on the final? Well, no, right? We have this kind of direct proof, proof by cases. We also have induction and contradiction. We expect you to be able to use all 4 proof techniques. So we will ask you induction, contradiction, direct, and cases. Might not get to all of them, but the intent is to cover them all. The logic part will only deal with the simpler two, direct and by cases. Yes. So on logic, we're going to measure these sort of just apply logic kind of proof techniques. And then the fancier kind of proof techniques will be on the proofs portion. Okay. Anything else that you would like me to do to help you review? I think I've answered all the questions we've had so far. I might not have. If I haven't, please ask it again. Well, if there are no more questions, we'll only be able to do 2 pages on Monday. You will only be able to do 1 topic. I need to be able to grade them all in time for you to get feedback for it to be useful. So you'll get to pick 1 of 5 options. You get to not do it at all, or do logic, or do proofs, or do structures, or do numbers, at most 1. Could you use logic proof on quiz 12 last year? I just did. On quiz 12. Okay, I'll get to that in just a moment. Someone previously asked for prime factor sequences to be reviewed. Oh, I missed seeing that. Okay, Did they give any more context than that? I see somebody asking if it was okay for them to do that review for themselves. I didn't understand that to be an actual request to do that. If somebody has questions about primes, factors, and sequencing, I'd be happy to address those. Meanwhile, let me go to quiz 12 instead of final and see where we are there. Yes, so I understood that comment. Please correct me if I'm wrong. I understood that comment to mean, is it okay to limit our review to the quizzes that we need to do, that we might need to take the quiz on? If that was instead a request that I review it, please let me know. Okay. All right. So, how about this? How do we go about this? Note that this is an entailment rather than an equivalence. Where does it say what topics are on a specific quiz? There's a review link on the course website that has a brief summary of the topics per quiz for each of the 11 quizzes so far, which I think I have up here someplace. Nope, apparently not. But if you click the past quizzes and labs, right, I have my brief summary of what I think it's covering. Wrong button. I have too many buttons on my computer. All right. Okay. Because this is an entailment rather than equivalence, I have a broader set of proof rules I can use. In particular, showing that this implies that is sufficient. I don't need to show that they're equivalent. In fact, they aren't equivalent. I've got terms over here that aren't over there that don't cancel out. Okay? And so I would need to use either direct proof or proof by cases. In this case, proof by cases will certainly be the easiest. You just have to show that if this is true, that is true as well, and there's only a few cases where this is true. But we can also deal in various other approaches. So let's just see what we can do via direct proof. One of our entailment rules is that P and Q entails P. We also know that K, and anytime we have an and, it entails both of its pieces. So these are the entailment rules that are going to be particularly useful for us. However, we don't want to jump directly to those because our rules apply to entire expressions, not to sub-expressions in general. If we could just jump in and do that, we would be done. So the concept here is that we sort of try to manipulate things to get those into position so that we can use them as entailment rules. Various ways we can try doing that. So let's just see an example, right? I have this disjunction of conjunctions. How can I deal with a disjunction of conjunctions? Well, I can use my distributive rule. We have a question here. If X entails Y, does that mean if Y, X is false, then Y is false? But never where one is true and the other is false. It's not quite entailment, right? Entailment means that the implication is a tautology. So entailment means that implication is tautological. And then when it just has one, it means, and we have shown that as well. Okay, which is why we're using the show that version here. So remember this thing, A implies B. If A, we do our sort of little mini truth table here. We need to show this is always true. And so therefore we need to show that this particular truth table, right? False implies false is true. False implies true is false. Sorry, false implies true is true. Get this right. This is the only one that's false. So we just need to show that that case can't exist. And show that row never occurs. And so all I need to do here is show that when this is true, that is not false. If I've done that, I have shown the implication and therefore the entailment. So if I was going by cases, that would be all I would need to do. I could even just sort of start with the case that I care about, the case where the antecedent is true, and show that the consequent must also be true. I think I've said enough to make this work, and so if people have other questions, I will certainly jump to them. But until other questions come up, let's just keep going. So I have this, I can distribute. So I can make turn this left-hand side. So I've got the P and Q, or K and M. And I can distribute this to turn that into P and Q, or K. And P and Q or M. Bleh. That doesn't seem wildly useful here. Okay. But now I don't need the M. So I now have a conjunction, and a conjunction in so this was an equivalence, but then I can do an entailment using these. We never write it that way. Let me do it this way instead. Okay, so that was equivalent to this, but that then entails, I can just drop one of the terms because a conjunction entails either of its pieces. So I can then just turn this into P and Q or K. That is entailed by that. That then, by the distributive rule, is equivalent to P or K and Q or K. And that then entails the first part, which is what I care about. Okay, so this is a way of getting here. We could do cases, we could mess around with it in other ways. We even noticed that you can mix math and English. So you also could have started out by saying, well, I know that this is true and I know that this is true. And so I just put those in the middle and use some English to do that. You wouldn't end up with a full entailment set of symbols, but you can do that with English as well because we said you could. Other questions? If I want to do proof by cases, would I have to show inputs for M and Q as well? So you can decide how to break down your cases, right? The basic concept of proof by cases, anytime you're doing proof by cases, is you need to proceed by cases. You need to sort of, the general model is that if I can show A or B, if I can show some disjunction is true, and I can show that A proves the thing I'm interested in, and that B proves the thing I'm interested in, then I have shown the thing I'm interested in. And these are my two cases. Okay, and to do those cases, I assume the antecedent. So we need to break it up on some disjunctive tautology, any disjunctive tautology we want. It doesn't matter what disjunctive tautology we pick. So I could pick, for example, that P is true or false and see where that goes. I could then, if I wanted to nest cases inside, I could pick that K is true or false. And it turns out that when we do that, all of these things will simplify down and we would never need to pick something for Q and M. We could also start by picking things for Q and M and show that it works that way as well. And it will work that way as well, right? The order you pick your cases will change the length of what you're doing, but won't change the end result. How did I disregard the other side of the and symbol? Yeah, so let's just remind ourselves, I realize it's been a long time since we've done this. So let's remind ourselves way back up at our, that's not the one we want. We want our home. What do I want? I want our axioms. We have entailments, right? So we've spent more of our time talking about the implications, but we also have entailments. If I know that A and B are true, I know that A is true. This is an entailment. It is not an equivalence, but it is an entailment. And as an entailment, is how I was using it in this case. I wasn't showing that the thing was equivalent. I was showing that it entailed the thing I cared about. So there's a question like, can we simplify down, then use proof by cases? We can just use proof by cases from the start. Absolutely. You could use only proof by cases all the way down until you end up with just trues and falses everywhere. You could do no proof by cases. You could start with some logic and then switch to cases. You could start with some cases and then switch to logic. These two techniques can be mixed and matched freely. Anything else you would like me to do to help you prepare for the coming quizzes and labs? Could you show how you do a proof by cases because it's stuck on how to interact with Q and M? Sure. So we proceed by cases. I need two cases. There are lots of cases I could do, but typically the simplest way to do is I just pick a variable and I try the case where it's true and the case where it's false. I can pick any variable I want. P, Q, K, M, doesn't matter what I pick. I can just pick something, anything I want. I don't know. Let's just arbitrarily pick Q. Let's say Q is true and Q is false. Pardon me. Sorry. Didn't mean to just sneeze into my microphone. All right. So if P is true, if Q is true, then this becomes P and true, or K and M proves P or K. Well, P and true is just P. And so then this becomes that or K and M. Right? And then I still have this thing that I'm trying to show. And now I have a simpler expression. I could distribute and use math from here. I could pick another variable and do another proof by cases, but I've made the problem simpler by doing this. And I'd also deal with this case. P and false, well, that term is just going to vanish. That just turns into false. So I have K and M over here. So that's going to turn into false or K and M. And false or just turns into the other thing. So that just turns into K and M. Okay. And so this is the way I would proceed, right? And so then both of these steps aren't quite where I want them to be. I still got this annoying M floating around. I could proceed by cases on M. I could also proceed by cases on K or P and see where that leads me. Or I could try doing some more math from here. But the concept is I just pick something and it will simplify my math. And if I keep picking something and simplifying my math forever, eventually I'll have no math left. Or at some point I can say, oh, I now know what to do and just do the direct. Anything else I can do for you? So after this, we could say the case of M true false. Absolutely. You could also pick some other case. You could pick K. You could pick P. You could pick anything you want. You could pick different things on the two sides. All of them will be fine. So we know when to finish, when we prove that it will never be true. So if we're just going proof by cases, we should always end up with just true. All of our cases should be true. We could have started differently. We could have said, oh, to prove entailment, you assume the antecedent and try to prove the consequent. And then we would want to always end up with P and K. But in this case, we can simply go along and try to make sure that we always end up with the value true. Would we start over completely? No, we would do a nested proof by cases. So if I wanted to, let me give myself a little more room. So if I wanted to sort of try to finish out this one, then I could say, let's do another color. Let's say we can now do case M is false and case M is true. And I would do that inside this case. It's important, right? If we're using multiple proof strategies or the same proof strategy multiple times, they need to occur in the correct context inside another. So I'm only doing this in this case. And so then I figure out what happens. If M is false, then this is just going to turn into false proves P or K, which is a true statement. By the definition of false proves everything. In this case, I would end up with K proves P or K. That's also a true statement by one of our entailment rules, that something proves the disjunction of itself with any arbitrary other thing we could happen to care about. And that would finish out our Q false case. We would also need to do something to finish out our Q true case. We could pick M here, but we could also pick P, we could also pick K, we could do anything they want. They're unrelated because they're happening in different cases. The end goal, though, is that, right, so sort of finish out a little bit more, right? So then I would say, because both cases are true, it's always true. For this subproof. And I'd also want to show somehow here that this is always true. And then I would conclude the whole proof by saying also because both cases are true, it is always true. So if you're using multiple proofs, make sure you keep them straight and have the appropriate conclusion text for each. All right, 5 minutes left. Anything else you would like me to say? Oh, one last question on this, which is? I guess it takes a bit to type them. Would you have to do M true false for both cases? No, absolutely not. I can do anything I want in here. So I could decide that the next thing I'm doing here is, I don't know, the case P is true and the case P is false. That would be absolutely fine because they're separate inner proofs. I don't need to pick the same variable. I don't even need to use proof by cases here. I could try doing some other proof strategy in this one if I wanted. That would also be okay. All right. So you only need to do one branch to prove it is true. No. No. If I'm doing proof by cases, both cases have to be true. If I show that one case is true and don't show anything about the other case, then I haven't finished telling the proof, right? As an example applicable to this class, right? If you get a credit or if you get a C or higher in this class, you can move on to take other classes. And it is incorrect to therefore prove by cases that you will always, if you take this class, you can take any subsequent class, because the cases are either you get a C or higher or you don't. If you do get a C or higher, then you can take other classes. I've shown one case is true, I'm done, right? I have to show all of the cases are true. I can show them each in a different way, but I have to show them all true. All of them have to conclude. How you did? I don't know what you're asking. Oh, yes. My nested proofs are independent of each other. They can run in completely different lines. But they both have, they each have to run all the way to conclusion. All right, we're just about out of time. And you know, sometimes it feels like after a whole semester, we ought to try to do some sort of summary. So actually, let's just come back out to the very beginning of what we talked about. Okay, this class, our goal was to give you the math you need to understand computing. And so we have spent some time teaching you how to prove things, different proof techniques, the languages of sets, functions, relations, subroutines, the idea of invertibility, one-to-one, onto, right? All of these different goals that we had going into the class, we've been able to give you some understanding about. And so these techniques will be used all through what you do in computing. Very rarely as the final product, but very often as a step along the way, a step to understand more fully what things are doing. Despite all of the chaos that this semester has done, I've quite enjoyed teaching you. I hope you've enjoyed the class as well. I hope your quizzes, if you're going to take more, will go well, and I will look forward to encountering you in whatever context I do so in the future. And we will now declare this course concluded.